Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is side one of For the Record program number 726, The Coctopus, the Tea Party Movement Manifests Classical Fascism. This program is being recorded on October 17th of the year 2010. The title of the program is a pun, obviously, on octopus, and it is playing with the title, with the last name, really, of a very, very powerful family, not as well known as they should be, and that is the Koch family, specifically the Koch brothers, Charles and David Koch. They, in turn, are the son of Fred Koch, one of the prime movers in the John Birch Society, and the Kochs have been instrumental in funding not only think tanks, but various forms of political expression that have been bringing to the fore, initially at least, a libertarian agenda. Indeed, David Koch was a big backer of the Libertarian Party in 1980. However, what it really is, the Koch agenda, the agenda being manifested by the Coctopus, or the Coctopus, excuse me, is one of corporatist thinking and outlook. Mussolini called fascism the corporate state or corporatism. And what we're going to be looking at in this program is the extent to which the Tea Party movement is in many ways manifesting a classic fascist paradigm in which a grassroots slash populist political movement is essentially bringing to the fore an ideological agenda which is against the best interests of the overwhelming majority of people who are operating at the grassroots. Indeed, we're going to be seeing how the Kochs, who are deeply involved in the fossil fuel, actually they're deeply involved in a lot of things, but the fossil fuels business, pipelines, and related enterprises are a big aspect of the Koch's enterprises, and they are in turn are major polluters, and they have a lot to say about the funding of cancer research, the classification of various chemicals as carcinogens or otherwise. And the more their agenda is able to be translated into physical reality and political reality, then ultimately the people who ingest, for example, those chemicals that are carcinogens but have been classified otherwise are going to eventually get cancer. Beyond that, the Kochs have been very active against every aspect of Obama's agenda as well as any aspect of politics dating to the New Deal. And if, in fact, the Obama health care measure, for all of its shortcomings, is undone in part or in whole, then ultimately the people who get cancer from David Koch's enterprises are not going to get the medical care that they need. So when they're out stumping for the Coctopus and when they're out stumping for the Tea Party and saying things like, keep your government hands off of my Medicare, they in many ways are manifesting a classic corporatist agenda, a classic fascist agenda in which the brown or black-shirted masses are in fact putting into effect a political agenda that is against their best interests. What we're going to be doing in this program is accessing an article that many people are aware of. That is from the New Yorker magazine of August 30th of 2010. Jane Mayer authored an article titled Covert Operation, subtitled The Billionaire Brothers Who Are Waging a War Against Obama. The article's gotten a fair amount of circulation and a fair amount of gravitas, and I'm going to read the vast bulk of the article into the record. A few things I want to point out. In addition to the tremendous power of the Koch brothers, I also want to point out, first of all, their opposition to global warming, the Koch brothers' enterprises seizing upon the release of the East Anglia documents, leaked by WikiLeaks, by the way, which cast aspersions on global warming. I also want to note the opposition of the Koch forces to the Copenhagen Climate Conference on Global Warming. It was at that conference, or as an outgrowth of that, that Stephen Schneider, the Nobel Prize winner, began receiving death threats from neo-Nazis. He died of an apparent heart attack on a flight from Sweden to London. Also note the corporatist, explicitly corporatist philosophy that was near and dear to Fred Koch, the father of David Charles. In fact, Fred Koch was an open admirer of Mussolini, and what his sons have done is to basically put Mussolini's philosophy into effect as an American, quote, reformist, unquote, political agenda. Again, the article is called Covert Operations by Jane Mayer from The New Yorker of August 30th of 2010. The article reads as follows. Skipping down, after discussing the Koch brothers and their presence, actually David Koch's presence at an event that was in basically to honor people who had supported Lincoln Center in New York, we read, one dignitary was conspicuously absent from the gala, the event's third honorary co-chair, Michelle Obama, the First Lady. Her office said that a scheduling conflict had prevented her from attending. Yet, had the First Lady shared the stage with Koch, it might have created an awkward tableau. In Washington, Koch is best known as part of a family that has repeatedly funded stealth attacks on the federal government and on the Obama administration in particular. With his brother Charles, who was 74, David Koch owns virtually all of Koch Industries, a conglomerate headquartered in Wichita, Kansas, whose annual revenues are estimated to be $100 billion. The company has grown spectacularly since their father Fred died in 1967 and the brothers took charge. The Kochs operate oil refineries in Alaska, Texas, and Minnesota and control some 4,000 miles of pipeline. Koch Industries owns Brawny Paper Towels, Dixie Cups, Georgia-Pacific Lumber, Stainmaster Carpet, and Lycra, among other products. Forbes ranks it as the second-largest private company in the country after Cargill, and its consistent profitability has made David and Charles Koch, who years ago bought out two other brothers, among the richest men in America. Their combined fortune of $35 billion is exceeded only by those of Bill Gates and Warren Buffett. The Kochs are longtime libertarians who believe in drastically lower personal and corporate taxes, minimal social services for the needy, and much less oversight of industry, especially environmental regulation. These views dovetail with the brothers' corporate interests. In a study released this spring, the University of Massachusetts at Amherst's Political Economy Research Institute named Koch Industries one of the top 10 air polluters in the United States. And Greenpeace issued a report identifying the company as a, quote, kingpin of climate science denial, unquote. The report showed that from 2005 to 2008, the Kochs vastly outdid ExxonMobil in giving money to organizations fighting legislation related to climate change, underwriting a huge network of foundations, think tanks, and political front groups. Indeed, the brothers have funded opposition campaigns against so many Obama administration policies, from health care reform to the economic stimulus program, that in political circles, their ideological network is known as the Kochtopus. In a statement, Koch Industries said that the Greenpeace report distorts the environmental record of our companies, unquote. And David Koch, in a recent admiring article about him in New York Magazine, protested that the radical press, unquote, had turned his family into whipping boys, unquote, and had exaggerated its influence on American politics. But Charles Lewis, the founder of the Center for Public Integrity, a nonpartisan watchdog group, said, quote, the Kochs are on a whole different level. There's no one else who has spent this much money. The sheer dimension of it is what sets them apart. They have a pattern of lawbreaking, political manipulation, and obfuscation. I've been in Washington since Watergate, and I've never seen anything like it. They are the Standard Oil of our times, unquote. A few weeks after the Lincoln Center gala, the advocacy wing of the Americans for Prosperity Foundation, an organization that David Koch started in 2004, held a different kind of gathering. Now, note here the profound, purse strings, running from the Kochtopus to the Tea Party movement are in evidence here. The Kochs are very secretive about who to whom they give, and although David Koch has recently begun speaking out in favor of the Tea Party movement, they deny any direct connection, as does the Tea Party movement. That, simply put, is, shall we say, less than candid. Continuing, over the July 4th weekend, a summit called Texas Defending the American Dream took place in a chilly hotel ballroom in Austin. Though Koch freely promotes his philanthropic ventures, he did not attend the summit and his name was not in evidence. And on this occasion, the audience was roused not by a dance performance but by a series of speakers denouncing President Barack Obama. Peggy Venable, the organizer of the summit, warned that administration officials, quote, have a socialist vision for this country, unquote. 500 people attended the summit, which served in part as a training session for Tea Party activists in Texas. An advertisement cast the event as a populist uprising against vested corporate power. Note this, repeating this last sentence. An advertisement cast the event as a populist uprising against vested corporate power. Quote, today, the voices of average Americans are being drowned out by lobbyists and special interests, it said. Again quoting, but you can do something about it, unquote. The pitch made no mention of its corporate funders. The White House has expressed frustration that such sponsors have largely eluded public notice. David Axelrod, Obama's senior advisor, said, quote, what they don't say is that, in part, this is a grassroots citizen movement brought to you by a bunch of oil billionaires, unquote. In April of 2009, Melissa Colmia, a company spokesperson, denied that the Kochs had direct links to the Tea Party, saying that Americans for Prosperity is, quote, an independent organization and Koch companies do not in any way direct their activities, unquote. Later, she issued a statement, quote, no funding has been provided by Koch companies, the Koch foundations, or Charles Koch, or David Koch specifically to support the Tea Parties, unquote. David Koch told New York, quote, I've never been to a Tea Party event. No one representing the Tea Party has ever even approached me, unquote. At the lectern in Austin, however, Venable, a longtime political operative who draws a salary from Americans for Prosperity, the Koch Foundation, and who has worked for Koch-funded political groups since 1994, spoke less warily, quote, we love what the Tea Parties are doing because that's how we're going to take back America, she declared as the crowd cheered. In a subsequent interview, she described herself as an early member of the movement, joking, quote, I was part of the Tea Party before it was cool, unquote. She explained that the role of Americans for Prosperity was to help, quote, educate, unquote, Tea Party activists on policy details and to give them next step training after their rallies so that their political energy could be channeled more effectively. And she noted that Americans for Prosperity had provided Tea Party activists with lists of elected officials to target. She said of the Kochs, quote, they're certainly our people. David's the chairman of our board. I've certainly met with him, and I'm very appreciative of what they do, unquote. Venable honored several Tea Party citizen leaders at the summit. The Texas branch of Americans for Prosperity gave its Blogger of the Year award to a young woman named Sybil West. On June 14th, West, writing on her site, described Obama as the, quote, Kochhead-in-chief, unquote. In an online thread, West speculated that the president was exhibiting symptoms of, quote, demonic possession, a.k.a. schizophrenia, unquote. The summit featured several paid speakers, including Jeanine Turner, the actress best known for her role on the television series Northern Exposure. She declared, quote, they don't want our children to know about their rights. They don't want our children to know about a God, unquote. During a catered lunch, Venable introduced Ted Cruz, a former Solicitor General of Texas, who told the crowd that Obama was, quote, the most radical president ever to occupy the Oval Office, unquote, and had hidden from voters a secret agenda, quote, the government taking over our economy and our lives, unquote. Countering Obama, Cruz proclaimed was the epic fight of our generation, unquote. As the crowd rose to its feet and cheered, he quoted the defiant words of a Texan at the Alamo, victory or death, unquote. Americans for Prosperity has worked closely with the Tea Party since the movement's inception. In the weeks before the first Tax Day protests in April of 2009, Americans for Prosperity hosted a website offering supporters, quote, Tea Party talking points, unquote. Again, bear in mind that Americans for Prosperity is a Koch entity. Continuing, the Arizona branch urged people to send tea bags to Obama. The Missouri branch urged members to sign up for taxpayer Tea Party registration, unquote, and provided directions to non-protests. The group continues to stoke the rebellion. The North Carolina branch recently launched a Tea Party Finder website advertised as a hub for all the Tea Parties in North Carolina, unquote. The anti-government fervor infusing the 2010 elections represents a political triumph for the Kochs. By giving money to educate, unquote, fund and organize Tea Party protesters, they have helped turn their private agenda into a mass movement. Bruce Bartlett, a conservative economist and a historian who once worked for the National Center for Policy Analysis, a Dallas-based think tank that the Kochs fund, said, quote, "The problem with the whole libertarian movement is that it's been all chiefs and no Indians. There haven't been any actual people like voters who give an expletive deleted about it. So the problem for the Kochs has been trying to create a movement," unquote. With the emergence of the Tea Party, he said, "Everyone suddenly sees that for the first time there are Indians out there, people who can provide real ideological power," unquote. The Kochs, he said, are trying to shape and control and channel the populist uprising into their own policies, unquote. A Republican campaign consultant who has done research on behalf of Charles and David Koch said of the Tea Party, quote, "The Koch brothers gave the money that founded it. It's like they put the seeds in the ground. Then the rainstorm comes and the frogs come out of the mud and they're our candidates," unquote. The Kochs and their political operatives declined requests for interviews. Instead, a prominent New York public relations executive who is close with the Kochs put forward two friends, George Pataki, the former governor of New York, and Mortimer Zuckerman, the publisher and real estate magnate. Pataki, a Republican who received campaign donations from David Koch, called him a, quote, "patriot who cares deeply about his country," unquote. Zuckerman praised David's, quote, "gentle decency," unquote, and the range of his public interests, unquote. The Republican campaign consultant said of the family's political activities, quote, "to call them under the radar is an understatement. They are underground," unquote. Another former Koch advisor said, "they're smart. This right-wing redneck stuff works for them. They see this as a way to get things done without getting dirty themselves," unquote. Rob Stein, a Democratic political strategist who has studied the conservative movement's finances, says that the Kochs are, quote, "at the epicenter of the anti-Obama movement. But it's not just about Obama. They would have done the same to Hillary Clinton. They did the same to Bill Clinton. They are out to destroy progressivism." Oddly enough, the fiercely capitalist Koch owes part of its fortune to Joseph Stalin. Fred Koch was the son of a Dutch printer who settled in Texas and ran a weekly newspaper. Fred attended MIT, where he earned a degree in chemical engineering. In 1927, he invented a more efficient process for converting oil into gasoline, but according to family lore, America's major oil companies regarded him as a threat and shut him out of the industry. Unable to succeed at home, Koch found work in the Soviet Union. In the 1930s, his company trained Bolshevik engineers and helped Stalin's regime set up 15 modern oil refineries. Over time, however, Stalin brutally purged several of Koch's Soviet colleagues. Koch was deeply affected by the experience and regretted his collaboration. He returned to the United States. In the headquarters of his company, Rock Island Oil and Refining in Wichita, he kept photographs aimed at proving that some of those Soviet refineries had been destroyed in the Second World War. Gus DeZarega, a former friend of Charles Koch, recalled, quote, "as the Soviets became a stronger military power, Fred felt a certain amount of guilt at having helped them build up. I think it's bothered him a lot," unquote. Now, next, the article goes into Fred Koch, the father of David and Charles, his participation in the John Birch Society. In a future broadcast, I think it may be time to review a little about the John Birch Society. It seems to be reemerging into the public spotlight. It never went away, but it wasn't garnering a lot of press. But it seems to be getting more publicity and might be worth a show one of these days real soon. But in any event, Fred Koch was in fact a key John Birch Society activist, and he also was an admirer of Benito Mussolini, he of the corporatist philosophy. Returning to Jane Mayer's article, Covert Operations, in 1958, Fred Koch became one of the original members of the John Birch Society, the arch-conservative group known in part for a highly skeptical view of governance and for spreading fears of a communist takeover. Members considered President Dwight D. Eisenhower to be a communist agent. In a self-published broadside, Koch claimed that, quote, "the communists have infiltrated both the Democratic and Republican parties," unquote. He wrote admiringly of Benito Mussolini's suppression of communists in Italy and disparagingly of the American civil rights movement. Quote, "The colored man looms large in the communist plan to take over America," he warned. "Welfare was a secret plot to attract rural blacks to cities where they would foment a, quote, vicious race war," unquote. In a 1963 speech that prefigures the Tea Party's talk of a secret socialist plot, Koch predicted that communists would, quote, "infiltrate the highest offices of government in the U.S. until the president is a communist, unknown to the rest of us," unquote. There then is a discussion of the background of the Koch brothers, where they went to school and whom they married and so forth, and also of the struggles that the group has had, that the family has had among its members. There was a bitter dispute over business matters among the brothers, and in fact, it was so intense that at the funeral of their mother, the two groups, the two factions of Koch brothers, did not speak to one another. So skipping down from that to the part that is relevant to all of us, what the Koch brothers are doing in a big way on the American political landscape, going back to the statements of Gus De Zerega, a friend of the Koch brothers. But De Zerega believes that the Koch brothers have followed a wayward intellectual trajectory, transferring their father's paranoia about Soviet communism to a distrust of the U.S. government and seeing its expansion beginning with the New Deal as a tyrannical threat to freedom. In an essay posted on BeliefNet, De Zerega writes, quote, "As state socialism failed, the target for many within these organizations shifted to any kind of regulation at all. Socialism," unquote, "kept being refined downwards," unquote. Members of the John Birch Society developed an interest in a school of Austrian economists who promoted free market ideals. Charles and David Koch were particularly influenced by the work of Friedrich von Hayek, the author of The Road to Serfdom, 1944, which argued that centralized government planning led inexorably to totalitarianism. Hayek's belief in unfettered capitalism has proved inspirational to many conservatives and to anti-Soviet dissidents as well. Lately, Tea Party supporters have championed his work. In June, the talk radio host Glenn Beck, who has supported the Tea Party rebellion, promoted The Road to Serfdom on his show. The paperback soon became a number one bestseller on Amazon. Beck appears to be a fan of the Kochs. In the midst of a recent on-air parody of Al Gore, Beck said without explanation, "I want to thank Charles Koch for this information," unquote. Beck declined to elaborate on the relationship. Charles and David also became devotees of a more radical thinker, Robert Lefevre, who favored the abolition of the state but didn't like the label anarchist. He called himself an autarchist. Lefevre liked to say that government is a disease masquerading as its own cure, unquote. In 1956, he opened an institution called the Freedom School in Colorado Springs. Brian Doherty of Reason magazine told me that, quote, "Lefevre was an anarchist figure who won Charles's heart," unquote, and that the school was a tiny world of people who thought the New Deal was a horrible mistake, unquote. According to De Zerega, Charles supported the school financially and even gave him money to take classes there. Then more about the corporate struggles of the various brothers. Skipping down, as the fortunes grew, Charles and David Koch became the primary underwriters of hardline libertarian politics in America. Charles's goal, as Doherty described it, was to tear the government, quote, "out at the root," unquote. The brothers' first major public step came in 1979 when Charles persuaded David, then 39, to run for public office. They had become supporters of the Libertarian Party and were backing its presidential candidate, Ed Clark, who was running against Ronald Reagan from the right. Frustrated by the legal limits on campaign donations, they contrived to place David on the ticket in the vice presidential slot. Upon becoming a candidate, he could lavish as much of his personal fortune as he wished on the campaign. The ticket's slogan was, quote, "The Libertarian Party has only one source of funds, you," unquote. In fact, its primary source of funds was David Koch, who spent more than $2 million on the effort. Many of the ideas propounded in the 1980 campaign presaged the Tea Party movement. Ed Clark told The Nation magazine that libertarians were getting ready to stage, quote, "a very big Tea Party," unquote, because people were sick to death, unquote, of taxes. The Libertarian Party platform called for the abolition of the FBI and the CIA, as well as of federal regulatory agencies such as the Securities and Exchange Commission and the Department of Energy. The party wanted to end Social Security, minimum wage laws, gun control, and all personal and corporate income taxes. It proposed the legalization of prostitution, recreational drugs, and suicide. Government should be reduced to only one function, the protection of individual rights. William F. Buckley, Jr., a more traditional conservative, called the movement anarcho-totalitarianism, unquote. That November, the Libertarian ticket received only 1% of the vote. The brothers realized that their brand of politics didn't sell at the ballot box. Charles Koch became openly scornful of conventional politics. Quote, "It tends to be a nasty, corrupting business," he told a reporter at the time. "I'm interested in advancing libertarian ideas," unquote. According to Doherty's book, the Kochs came to regard elected politicians as merely, quote, "actors playing out a script," unquote. A longtime confidant of the Kochs told Doherty that the brothers wanted to, quote, "supply the themes and words for the scripts," unquote. In order to alter the direction of America, they had to, quote, "influence the areas where policy ideas percolate from, academia, and the think tanks," unquote. After the 1980 election, Charles and David Koch receded from the public arena, but they poured more than $100 million into dozens of seemingly independent organizations. Tax records indicated that in 2008, the three main Koch family foundations gave money to 34 political and policy organizations, three of which they founded and several of which they direct. The Kochs and their company have given additional millions to political campaigns, advocacy groups, and lobbyists. The family's subterranean financial role has fueled suspicion on the left. Li Fang of the liberal blog Think Progress has called the Kochs, quote, "the billionaires behind the hate," unquote. We're going to continue with this article from the New Yorker magazine of August 30th of 2010 inside two of the program. In order to flesh out your understanding of the subject material, in particular, in order to get a better grasp of what I mean when I talk about classical fascism or corporatism or the corporate state, as Mussolini called it, check out SpitfireList.com, the best source for information of this kind. There's also a page to click on in order to support the work that I'm doing. And if you don't like what you see, there's no better way of fighting back than supporting the work that I'm doing, because sadly, it's the Kochs funding the other side. I just haven't got that kind of resources. This concludes Side 1 of For the Record, program number 726, The Kochtopus, The Tea Party Movement Manifests Classical Fascism. This program has been recorded on October 17th of the year 2010. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.